Welcome to another edition of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Joe Favorito, along with my able-bodied co-host, Tom Richardson. Tom, welcome back.
What's happening, Joe? Are you ready for another episode?
Yep, and we've gone down kind of the media path a couple times before with people like Scott Soschnick at Bloomberg.
Don't forget Tina.
And Tina Servasio, exactly. Yeah. And Kim from Excel Sports.
Right.
But we're going to kind of go down a little bit of a different path today. It's kind of a hybrid of media, marketing, branding, brand building, entrepreneurship, because our guest is Mandy Antonacci, sports business consultant, writer for Inc. magazine, a number of other places, personality on air, but someone who's had kind of a circuitous way to get to the media space. So Mandy, welcome.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, Mandy.
So how did you get here? Let's kind of, why don't we touch a little bit on what you do now, really kind of on the Inc. side, but also just in general and how you work with clients. But how did you get to be kind of in the media space, which is a different route than what most people would think when they think about journalism?
Yeah. Circuitous, I think, is apropos. It's a wonderful word to use to describe my career because I did not start in media nor sports. I actually started my career in a marketing role for a healthcare company. It was the largest healthcare company in the world, still is, Sanofi Aventis. I was going to graduate school at the time, studying creative writing. I had a sister-in-law who was a scientist, and she said to me, there's a job here that sounds like you, and they pay for school. And I thought, science? It's like, you know, foreign to my DNA as a human being, but all I heard at the time was, and they pay for school. So I thought, okay, sign me up. And the position was really all about communications and marketing. And so I thought, okay. So being a collegiate athlete and an athlete my entire life, I think my competitive nature got the best of me. I became much more focused on moving up within the company, less focused on school. And I did that quite well. I grew to a global product marketing role for them, being a French-based company. It was great early on in my career because I was afforded wonderful mentors whom I truly quote, I think, every week. I was traveling a lot, so I was doing this trifecta in France and Canada and the United States. And I was responsible for everything from, you know, telling a story on a package, brand positioning, communications to the sales force, advertising, you name it. And I was very young at the time, and I remember I was the only woman in a marketing department for my entire duration there, but I remember my boss put me in very uncomfortable situations intentionally to help groom me and grow me in the organization.
Was he French?
He was not French. He was American, but I was 23 years old, and he said, you know, if you are owning this launch, I want you to be the face of it. So I was standing up on a stage, and there were thousands of people, and I thought, there's a band, there's lights, I'm like a rock star here, and I really got the bug for public speaking, and really, I minored in psychology. I'm fascinated with psychology, but just the ability to transform human behavior through the written or spoken word is a passion of mine. Mm-hmm. So that really ignited for me in my journey in marketing. After a while, I felt, you know, you launch one, you launch them all, and I was really thirsty for a little bit more of a creative spark. And I moved over to the advertising side. Now, being in marketing, you name the agency, I've seen their pitch offerings. So I moved over to Omnicom and then eventually to Publicis. I grew to become one of the youngest executive vice presidents in the industry there. And that was the first opportunity I truly had to merge my passion for sports with my profession. Because opportunities really, I think, especially for a girl, just weren't available or weren't... I think they weren't as prevalent or accessible. So I would, you know, oversee and build communications in 12 different countries for brands like U.S. Open Tennis. I worked in the Olympics. And then I also worked on non-sport brands like LG Electronics and Hilton Worldwide. I got a little thirst for entrepreneurship in that role. And I always knew that I would be an entrepreneur because, you know, from starting companies when I was a little girl and just thinking of ways to monetize them as a part-time job in high school and college. But I knew I would end up as an entrepreneur, and I kind of, you know, planned things. I started to dabble in a little consultancy work while I was at Publicis on the side, which was very difficult, you know, 18-hour days and traveling the globe and doing your passion projects on the side, as I think any entrepreneur can attest. I had my toe in the water of you know, small agency and startup acquisitions at Publicis, and that helped to fuel my thirst for entrepreneurship. I was at a speaking engagement. I met the editor-in-chief of Inc. magazine, and he and I spoke about authoring a column to give budding entrepreneurs advice and inspiration, and I said I would love to. And I said, you know, what can I write about? And he said, you can write about whatever you want. And I said, can I write about sports business? And he said, you can write about whatever you want. And I thought, perfect. So I started writing for Inc. magazine, and it's, you know, during the time, which is now, truthfully, where I think that convergence of sport, technology, and entrepreneurship is so big, and the landscape is so wide. So I created a voice and a platform for myself and just really expanded into multimedia channels from there.
So before we kind of jump ahead to, and Tom's ready to ask several thousand questions, can you just take one step back, because a couple of things you left open. An athlete, what sports did you play? Where did you go to college? And then did you ever finish to get your graduate degree?
Wonderful questions. So I played, my focus was softball. And I was probably the, and still am, I think, probably the girliest jock you'll ever meet. So I say that wholeheartedly because if anyone from my previous team is listening, they will echo those comments because I always had the perfect manicure and the longest ponytail. But I can tell you that my coaches will still say to you if you ask them that I hit balls that haven't landed yet, right? So I was a cleanup batter with the perfect manicure and
right
the longest ponytail.
Hand.
Right hand. But they stuck tall girls at first base early on because, let's face it, when you're, you know, playing a sport in grade school, you need a wide net, right? Mm-hmm. So there's balls going everywhere. So I focused on softball. I did play basketball and tennis as well. Now I run and do yoga, so I moved from team sports to individualized sports as I got older. But my focus and my scholarship money came from softball. I had a few scholarships to quite a few different schools. I ended up going to the University of Scranton because I had a little bit of a family legacy to uphold. So my grandfather went there when it was St. Thomas Aquinas. My great uncle went there. My grandfather went there, when it was a military base. My great uncle went there when it was St. Thomas Aquinas. My mom was the first woman to graduate from there because it was an all-male school at the time and women were only allowed to go at night. And she ended up graduating with a double major in economics and finance. So my brothers and I went there, so we had a bit of a family legacy to uphold. I never finished my master's in creative writing, so I like to think that aside from the degree, a lot of the writing and the work and the authorship that I do helped to supplement, I think, the duration of my degree that I still am lacking.
So, Amanda, you walked away from the corporate life in the advertising business to start the writing career, journalism career, along with some consulting.
Yep.
How did you actually kick off that journalistic path? Like, what did you do first? Because, you got what you wanted to write about sports. But obviously you needed a plan to actually do it. Was it a weekly column?
A weekly column. So
right.
there's
a lot, you start a weekly column, that's a hungry beast to feed.
It is a hungry beast to feed. And, I think the approach that I took, which is truly the approach that I take in everything I do, and this is something that I've written about before, is really to adopt a growth versus fixed mindset. And when I say that, I mean I approach everything in the most learned and studious ability possible. Because for me, I feel like the day I stop learning is the day that I suffocate myself. Mm-hmm. So even today, I am consistently studying other authors. I study poets. I study so many different... I've always studied music, actually. So I study filmmakers. So many different ways that storytelling is communicated to perfect my craft. And a weekly column, just like you said, is a beast. So I think staying on top of cultural trends and finding creative ways to insert myself in those conversations have certainly helped. Now, for me, my passion, as you know, just with my column name and company as Change Up, is more in the transformational side of those stories. So I gravitate to more sport as a tool for cultural and social change, and also transformation of humanity. So something that really incites something within us that we either didn't know existed, or something that has been dormant for quite some time. So I really strive to, I think, have a different voice to help with that transformational aspect.
So what are some examples of stories that you've uncovered and written about that address that part of the business world?
I think, my most popular piece to date, specifically for Inc. magazine, has been my trends piece. And it's basically the top trends, top 10 trends of the coming year. And I think the reason for it, people have a tendency to gravitate to trends because everybody wants to be ahead of the curve and, like I said, insert themselves into those cultural conversations. That by far has been a fascinating piece because it's not just a summation. It's more than a summation of the previous year. It's more of the futurist aspect of where we feel our world is going, and everyone wants to do a great job of staying on top of that. I think for me now, and I've recently signed a contract to author a column as well for The Cauldron with Sports Illustrated. Within those particular stories, what I will be working on are more long-form content and profiling athletes or profiling figures or entities in sport, again, that represent that cultural and social change. So really, those human interest stories. So those are the things that jazz me immensely.
How did, when you were working on the marketing side, how did that influence what you're doing now? Mm-hmm. What did you like the most about that? And then why did you get out of it? Because we never really got into how you suddenly made this cataclysmic or big change to what it is that you're doing now.
You know, it's interesting that you call it a big change because for me, it's really not that big of a change. And the reason I say that is because I think on the surface, it's funny, I used to get angry with my family because they never really knew what I did over the years or they couldn't articulate it. And I would think, they don't care, they don't listen to me, but it's really that they couldn't keep up, right? So I used to say that I lead a rather fearless life, and it was just recently I came to the conclusion that I've been untruthful with myself for quite some time because the one thing I do fear is immobility. And in thinking about that approach to my life and to my business, I'm always pushing myself out of my comfort zone. I think that stems back to some of the mentors that I've had who have done that for me along the way and pushed me in uncomfortable situations like that speaking engagement that I told you about or, you know, whatever it might be. But I now lean into myself to do that. I think the reason why there's a commonality there and a connectivity to everything I've done is because no matter if it was marketing or advertising or now as a columnist, writer, whatever the case might be, I've always been a cultural storyteller. So regardless if that story finds itself in an ad, on a label, in a positioning, in a newspaper, in a magazine, maybe it's just a post in social media. And I don't even say just lightly. I should actually omit that word because a post in social media can be quite powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
I think regardless of where it lands, inherently, I have always been a cultural storyteller. So I think pulling those principles and that mindset from everything I've done in my career is really just, I think, some of those aspects that I still do, regardless of where it lands.
You talked about mentors.
Yes.
You didn't name any yet, though. That's part of the storytelling. So who influenced you in your career?
Mm.
And then where do you find heroes? Who are some of the heroes that you have?
Oh, that is a great question.
That's why we asked him.
Joe is known for those.
Yeah.
Really great questions.
Do you know what
zingers.
They are zingers. You know, an interesting thing is, I am such a proponent of inspiring more females to get involved in sports. I've just recently come to the conclusion that my first female boss was myself.
Wow.
And I did not realize that, but my entire career and journey, I've never had a female boss until I became my own. I've had plenty of inspiring people along the way who propelled me in my journey. Some I haven't met and some I have. My mom, obviously, is a huge piece of inspiration in my life. She's actually practiced very tough love on me throughout my entire life, and I think that's very typical for an Italian family, especially growing up with older brothers, right? So hard on the youngest girl, but the brothers can do no wrong. So I think that has actually inspired me in many ways. I had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Condoleezza Rice, and I have to tell you, one of the things that I have gained comfort in, that she helped me gain comfort with, is the frenetic aspect to my career. So you'll notice you use the word circuitous, and I think that was a perfect summation. When you look at her as an entity, she's so many disparate things, mm-hmm. right? She is a professor. She was, you know, obviously there's a political side to her, and then there's a side to her which is just a passion. You know, she's an author, but then she's so passionate about sport.
A wannabe NFL commissioner.
And I talked to her about that, and she gave me a really great answer about that. Quite PC, but at least I got an answer, right? So, but I think she, for me, is a role model because she is this wonderful collection of disparate things that to me makes sense mm-hmm. In sort of sometimes times in the frenetic way that I, you know, dabble in quite a few different things in the industry. In terms of heroes, because I think that's a beautiful question. To me, heroes, and actually I'll kind of piggyback on Dr. Condoleezza Rice. She authored a book about her parents called Extraordinary Ordinary People. And to me, that title is the perfect summation of a true hero. A hero to me is anybody who does ordinary things in an extraordinary way.
That's a Vince Lombardi line, by the way.
That's a Vince Lombardi line. Mm-hmm. And a hero for me that comes to mind who embodies that notion, I'm on the board for a basketball league in the summer here in the city. The entire purpose of this league is to keep kids off the street and safe during the summer months when school isn't in session. The man who started the league, it started in a project of eight kids. He was one of those eight kids in the project who just started a pickup basketball league. It grew now to 800 kids. Wow. And has become a scouting ground for Duke, Kentucky.
Who is that?
And huge schools. It's called, the league is called Positive Influence. Mm-hmm. The man who founded the program is Andrew Black. And it is just remarkable, absolutely remarkable. Wynton Marsalis is on the board as well, and it has, there are some, you know, officials in New York City who help, and I mean, it has grown tremendously. So what started as a means to keep kids safe has now grown to be this amazing opportunity for them that they wouldn't otherwise get to get, you know, to give them an opportunity for scholarship in school. So people like him, to me, who just took a simple thing and made it extraordinary, are heroes.
Who do you really admire in the world of journalism?
Oh.
Because, you know, obviously you started your journalistic aspect of your career later than most career journalists.
Yep.
Right, so you probably looked up to people along the way or now.
Yeah.
Who do you like?
That's a great question, too. I'm actually going to, you know, answer and rephrase the question just a little bit, because I think that looking at journalists solely would be a bit of a myopic view, because I just, if I could sort of blanket it across all storytellers, right? So, because a lot of the inspiration I get are not from pure play journalists, but just anybody who is a storyteller in their own right.
And
right.
I have reality stars don't count, though.
I don't go there. I don't even know if I can name five, sadly. But I will say, I played classical piano when I was younger, and I've always been a fan of music, always. Even now, if you look in my bag, you will see I take notes on music paper to remind myself of my creativity and sort of where I started, which is, I think, a great tip for anyone. But for me, some of the best storytellers are often musicians, are often filmmakers, and who are using storytelling poets in some of the most unexpected ways. I do believe Bruce Springsteen is one of the best storytellers of our time. I think he will go down as one of the best storytellers of our time. I remember my aunt bought me his greatest hits collection for Christmas one year, and I took it to bed with me, and I would do this all the time, and I would listen to music and I would study the lyrics, because I was just such a fan of poetry and the written word. I would memorize them until the next day, and then I would write them out and quiz myself to see if I knew every word to every song. And I just think the transformational power of his storytelling through music is exceptional. I also, my favorite TED talk, I will say, is a woman who does spoken word poetry. Her name is Sarah Kay, and she is remarkable, and she's a remarkable storyteller through her gift of spoken word poetry. And I truly probably listen to that TED talk once a month, just as inspiration.
That's cool.
And Tom has a background in music too, which makes it even more fascinating.
No, and I actually do a Twitter account where I just do lyrics. I realized as I got older, I grew up listening to tons of music, but I never truly paid attention to lyrics. So I started something where I just pull out lyrics, and I'll show it to you later.
Oh, I would love it.
I have a lot of fun with it, because I listen to a lot of music, and I always marvel at how some great things have been written, whether it's Springsteen or Dylan or Joni Mitchell or Radiohead, whoever. I pull it from all sources, because there's no premium on that. It's anybody can come up with a good lyric.
Yeah, no, I agree. Creative. Well, getting back to a journalistic perspective, a sort of journalistic perspective, but pulling it into the sports world, I have to say I'm very excited to see what 30 for 30, ESPN's 30 for 30 does with the podcast version of their 30 for 30 coming out next year.
Yes.
Because I think that's going to be a revolutionary approach to podcasting, pulling that through in a documentary type style. I think their power of storytelling is very,
yeah, and
very
I think,
dramatic.
You know, we've seen this incredible success of TED,
mm-hmm.
and the idea that we have been able to find a way, or they've been able to find a way to bring some of the great speakers of the world
mm-hmm.
to everyone who has access to
yeah.
a computer.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And then obviously the renaissance of podcasting, which has been
yep.
kind of remarkable. I want to go back to the point you made about how your trends column
is
the most popular, because I was looking at your trends column recently.
Thank you.
For 2016. I like to read trends columns in the middle of the year, especially like in digital media,
yeah.
to
yeah.
see if what everybody was saying 6 or 8 months ago
That's right.
actually is on target. But it was interesting to me that number one on your list for 2016 in sports business was one word, women.
Yes.
That's in the midst of over-the-top live streaming and concussion debates and
yep.
social media, this and that.
Kneeling for the national anthem.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world of sports business and in sports, but you picked women. So tell us.
I did.
Tell us why and tell us how you think the year's going vis-a-vis that prediction.
I did, and I'm actually thrilled that you pulled that out because it is an important piece of sports that sometimes gets suppressed. And I think this year in particular, we have seen and heard so many revolutionary stories of women in sports and change. One that comes to mind in particular, I was at Super Bowl this year, and there, for the first time ever, there was the inaugural Women's Summit at the NFL.
Right. Yeah, back in February.
Back
January,
in February.
February right.
And there were wonderful speakers, wonderful representation, and a panel representing this powerhouse of women. There was also a change. When you look at the Super Bowl activities, I would say at least half of them were catering women. So it's very clear that their target has changed, which is smart. For the first time ever, the NFL came out with a campaign that said NFL is family, and it was the first time in history the NFL ever produced a spot that did not include a man or a woman wearing a pink jersey, which I thought was also
right.
revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And it really depicted how it's a family sport and a tradition for moms and kids. I think the NFL is waking up to the fact that 45% of viewership is actually women. The person who is making a lot of the decisions for their children to play is mom, also making a lot of the purchasing decisions in the household. So they're waking up to that, and they're probably butting up to one of the other trends that I had in that piece, which is concussion growth
mm-hmm.
of research and analytics. And as that exposure increases in football, you need something to counter the decision makers like mom, right? And something to counter the concern about the safety of the sport. So I think that's happening quite well. I also think with Women's World Cup soccer and just the fame and notoriety and what that has done for women's sports has been remarkable this year. And I think also them voicing their, you know, need for equality in terms of equal pay has been wonderful. We've seen President Obama get up on a podium and use them as the example for equal pay in sports. So I think, and you know, just coming off of an Olympic season, there was, you know, I think female sports has become part of pop culture. You know, on the cover of Vogue magazine, we saw the women's U.S. rugby team with a caption of, "Are women's rugby the new women's World Cup soccer?" You know, so I think there's just so
And women won more medals. Correct?
Women won more medals.
Right. There was something like if women, you know, the U.S. women were a country, they would have been second.
Yes, I saw that.
The United States as a whole.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So I think that prediction of that trend is certainly, you know, surfaced, and it certainly revealed itself. I'm happy that I made it number one, actually.
It's
fruition.
Funny now that we talk about all these things. It is kind of a remarkable year.
Mm-hmm.
Any predictions on where it's going to go vis-a-vis the...
Well, you know, picking on the NFL, for example, because it's such a testosterone-laden sport, we've seen some changes already, having the first and second, female on the coaching staff for the NFL, so in the Buffalo Bills and at the Arizona Cardinals. We've also seen the first referee in the NFL. So I know in speaking with a lot of executives and coaches, the NFL as a whole has a push to get more women closer to the field. So I think we're going to start to see that change. We already have, which is great. I think... just streaming and more viewership going online versus television, which we know from a digital perspective we're seeing, it's going to open up channels for women's sports and viewership
mm-hmm.
And have that increase more so than we ever have before. Right. So I'm excited to see those two things happen.
Right. Wasn't one of the first Facebook Live Manifestations, Alex Morgan.
Yes.
Yes.
Doing something with her
yes.
team in the
yep.
yeah. Soccer League. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. You know, I
so
also.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Also, you know, I always say whenever I'm looking at trends, I don't just look at things that have happened or, you know, even just things that are predicted. I actually speak to the generation who is going to buy into that. So I use my nieces and nephews as a perfect example. And I use, I'm going to pick on my niece Morgan here, who is 12 now. And you know, her mom is really pushing her to be a cheerleader. She was a cheerleader back in the day, and she wants to be one. And my niece had this beautiful comeback to her mom, which is, I don't want to cheer for someone else. I want people to cheer for me. Hmm. And I just think that sentiment in particular is just the feeling, the emotion of today's girl, that I don't want to cheer for someone else. I want to be cheered for. And I think that, you know, strong is the new pretty. You know, as we're starting to see women and girls in sports grow into this category and evolve.
Mandy, how did you deal with the pressures as a writer for Inc. to extend your brand, your content into the social channels? Because it's been pretty interesting to watch how journalists have essentially mm-hmm. been pushed, sometimes screaming,
yeah.
into social media,
yeah.
and now they're everywhere. So whether they're newspaper writers in the New yeah. York Times. Or the columnists from magazines, they're out in full force in social
yeah.
media.
I could tell you begrudgingly.
Yeah.
For me in particular, I have never been a fan of social media because I don't use it personally. I only use it professionally.
So you were never a Facebook user, for example?
I'm still not.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had accounts that were more alias accounts because of my industry. You know, as an industry leader, I needed to, but I didn't want to, I couldn't consume myself from a time perspective just to getting there. And I thought, if I want to learn about your kids and I want to learn about, you know, changes or whatever, I'll just call you. I don't have time to engage in it. But when I did become more of a media, you know, person, you're forced to have one. It's not optional for Inc. So I needed to open up accounts, and I needed to get my voice out there in my face, and I needed to engage more. And I have to tell you, remarkably, I like to think that there's a testament there to the power of a positive message. And I also think there's a timing, part of the prescription as well, because I think right now we're living in a time where there is such a convergence of sports and entrepreneurship, and we're seeing more athletes come to the realization that the time that they spend on the court and off the field is so much, you know, so much less than the time that they'll spend off, and they're already starting to think about life after retirement. Mm-hmm. So what I'm finding is that I have a lot of professional athletes, coaches, and whatnot who follow me on social media who are reading the Inc. magazines of the world, and they're reading Forbes and Entrepreneur because they're starting to adopt that mindset. And I think because of the social media channels and the voice that they have, they are seeing themselves as a brand, and maybe to a detriment, because I think they are less focused on sport and more focused on themselves as a brand because of it. But for, you know, bad and different, I think that, you know, they are starting to follow those channels and start to think about themselves as a brand and start to think about themselves once they hang up their cleats. So I do find a lot of those people following me, as well as entrepreneurs and founders of companies.
Is your primary outlet Twitter?
It is. Yeah, well, a Twitter, Instagram,
okay.
LinkedIn, yeah, but primarily
okay.
it's Twitter. And that was a conscious choice. I don't believe that a brand or a company should be everywhere. I think you just kind of bifurcate yourself. I think you need to ask yourself, who is my audience? Where do I have mm-hmm. relevance? Where am I relatable? And where I should be? And I think you should kill it. So for me, because a majority of the sport conversation actually happens on Twitter, that's where my primary voice is.
Right, but in essence, imagery mm-hmm. being the primary content piece
yeah.
in Instagram. How are you using that in the context
yeah.
of your writing?
So I have to tell you, somebody told me you really need to get on Instagram, and this was whatever it was a couple years ago. And I said, but I'm a writer. Why do I need to go on Instagram? Exactly mm-hmm. what you're saying. I can't. And I he said, just trust me. You have to. I said, okay. So I did. And I have to tell you, what I do now is I extract, whether it's a quote, a visual, or something to drive traffic to my column.
Okay.
And I represent that if I'm at an event or if it's some, you know, element of my work, I will bring that to life visually. And I have to tell you, I have been amazed at the engagement that has come from Instagram for me as a writer. Tremendous.
So you spent a little time on Google Images looking for the right complimentary image to include?
Well, luckily, I have some interns who are helping me with that for sure. But it does require some thought. I do have a few interns who work with me now. One of the things that I have them deeply involved in is a content calendar so we can get ahead of it because it's a time suck. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. So just like, I treat my small business and my voice just like the big global conglomerates that I've run and that I've managed. They're no different. Right, we had to develop a content calendar, we had to get ahead of ourselves, we had to plan for certain things. And I think you also need to exercise a level of responsibility to ensure that you don't drive yourself crazy. So what I mean by that is, for example, I recently read an article that I thought articulated this beautifully. And it's, I'm a big fan of inserting yourself into cultural conversations, but you need to do so authentically.
Correct.
What people run the risk of is, FOMO, right? So fear of missing out. So all of a sudden, I need to be part of National Cheeseburger Day and Cookie Day and Ice Cream Day. And, okay, Gary Marshall passed away, so let me post my favorite movie. Really?
Yeah.
So I think we need to run... we need to exercise a level of constraint when it comes to social media, because when it starts to be inauthentic, it starts to damage your brand. And you need to be, you need to trust in the voice that you created and just go with that. I mean, Nike's not participating in National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day, right? So I think there's a level of authenticity that needs to be exercised.
So you mentioned before that maintaining that level of curiosity and self-education was really important to you.
Yes.
Always learning.
Yes.
Where are you going to learn things? What are you looking at every day to keep yourself smart?
That's a great question, too. I like to seek, for me, because I am such a purveyor of change, I like to look for things that are in conflict with the antagonist of change, which is fear, right? So for me, anyone who leads a life led by curiosity versus fear, I gravitate to them. So for example, I follow an illustrator. Her name is Jamie Reardon, I think. She does all of the illustrations she did a lot of them for Tim Burton films, and she does a lot for high-end designer brands. I find her work to be incredibly fascinating. She actually did something recently for Lincoln Center Ballet for the Nutcracker this year, and they did a video where they actually put her drawings to film, and they interjected basically moves from the ballet into the sketches of her artistry in such an amazing way. And I do believe that ballet is a confluence of sport and art, so it's something that I do pay attention to. So I follow people who truly live a life led by curiosity versus fear. More often than not, they seem to be artists.
What about specifically in the area of sports business? Since you have to write your weekly column, surely you need some catalysts for that. You need to pay attention to what's going on. What does your email inbox look like in the morning in terms of information?
I follow and I'm connected with a lot of mental training coaches. And I think because of my minor in psychology and my passion for transforming human behavior, I find their work to be fascinating. And I align a lot of what I do with what they do to athletes and to teams. My inbox does get flooded with a lot of emails from them. I was actually just texting one back and forth coming in here. But a lot of what we talk about is, what they're actually doing, and I actually call this is a new market that I feel is poised to completely boom, which is the mental market. And we're seeing brands like Adidas and Nike come into play, and startups, digital startups and apps that are coming into play where they're offering meditations and positive affirmation exercises to really, train your mental game. So I think mental
training
coaches.
The Headspace app? A really popular
Headspace
app.
Is one, yeah. But I prefer one that's specifically for athletes, which is Lucid.
Okay.
Yep, and it's designed from the content of mental training coaches who have trained Steph Curry, Michael Jordan, Ben Simmons.
And it's a consumer app we can all get
It's a consumer app we can all get to optimize our performance,
nice.
Whether
in
it's
the,
your...
In the iTunes Store?
It's in the iTunes Store, and it's ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
You ready, Joe?
There's a reason...
I'm very lucid right now.
You're lucid. There's a
reason...
And
you're going to be even more lucid tomorrow.
You are. There's a reason we all witnessed it during the NBA Finals, why Steph Curry, tweeted the caption, "Lock in." And he is, you know, part one of his trainers contributed to the content for Lucid, and lock in means I'm not concerned with what happened in the past. I'm not even concerned with the outcome of this game. I am locked into the present moment and present state because the only thing I have the ability to control is this moment. So,
that's great.
Mandy, before we let you go, where do people find you?
Oh, yes. So you can find me on social media. My handle is at Mandy Antonacci, and my website, mandyantonacci.com.
Thank you. Tom, once again, we're going to wrap up one more edition of the Cusp Show, the Columbia University
Sports
Podcast. Yeah, it was a great
conversation. Sports Podcast.
Thank
you, Mandy. Terrific. Some of your recommendations were wonderful. I'm going to check them out, especially Lucid. I'm ready to
get Lucid.
What's the phrase from Curry? To get?
You're going to lock in.
I'm going to lock in.
Yeah.
Next week, the show is going to be different. We're going to be locked in.
Love it.
Thanks, Mandy.
Thank you both. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU Sports Biz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.